not only did I do bad on this exam, but I'm going to fail the course, which is going to make me fail my degree. And without a degree, I'm not going to be able to get a job. And without a job, I'm going to be broke. My parents are going to kick me out, and then I'm going to be homeless.
And I'm going to die. So it's a lot, you know.
What's good? My name's Nuria.
And my name is Caroline. This is the Cathartic Experience.
Two therapists talking about life
in an unfiltered way.
Hello, you guys.
Hey.
Welcome back.
Welcome and welcome back. Welcome and welcome back.
Oh my goodness. Let's start like we usually do. How are you?
I'm doing better. I feel more balanced than I was last time, earlier this week. yeah, I'm doing better.
Yesterday!
Literally. But yeah, I'm doing better. Trying to maintain boundaries, as you know, with certain folks. for my own good, so yeah. What about you? How are you doing?
You know, I think the funny part is that, just a quick side note, a lot of people come to therapists because they think, oh, this therapist has their life together and they're guiding me. And it's like, yeah, we're learning our lessons and we've, you know, been trained in the art of mental health. But we have lives
that
we also have to be very kind of actively doing our own internal work and work in our own relationships too, like setting boundaries, or, you know, we also have troubles expressing how we feel. Like,
yes,
just because we teach people how to do it doesn't mean that it's always the easiest thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we also have to think about, you know, self-care or what happens when we overwork ourselves. So, you know, we're learning
as
at the
well
same time too. And it's very,
it's not because we're in this field that we're already, you know what I mean?
All
we're
together
all together and all that. And nobody really together, but
ain't nobody really back together.
We're trying to figure it out, and we have our own lives to sort out as
oh my
well.
Gosh, yes. So over the past week, I've been doing a lot of work on, you know, setting boundaries in my relationships with people, but also setting boundaries for myself. Because I'm someone who, if I like something, I delve head first and kind of want to do it all the time, even like spending money. I've been really reckless in my life, but mm-hmm. I'm really trying to get into like a pattern and kind of restricting myself and kind of teaching myself how to live a life that's not based on spending. And I think that it's hard to do in this economy oftentimes.
Oh, girl, yeah.
Society as well. So I'm learning a lot about how to take a step back, how to be mindful, how to recognize my emotions and what I tend to do off of instinct. But yeah, it's been I feel some growth starting to happen.
I think for both of us, we've had like breakthroughs this week.
Somehow.
Over just this week. In different ways. But yeah, like confronting things and seeing this isn't working anymore.
Yeah.
And I need to do something here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Learning, but today we're going to talk about the vulnerability to harm
schema.
So those of you who are always afraid of natural disasters or
major catastrophes,
or even crime, or those who are fearful of, you know, medical issues or financial issues, or even academic. So these are for those of us who catastrophize everything, like our biggest fears are what are most out of our control oftentimes.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about vulnerability to harm schema, it is the belief that one is always on the verge of experiencing a major catastrophe. So it tends to lead to excessive worries and also excessive precautions to protect
yourself
from that potential harm. So for example, if someone's really afraid of a natural disaster, they may not leave their homes. Or if someone's really afraid of crime, they may not develop relationships with people. And to a certain extent, So these people are always thinking about the what if. Mm-hmm. And of course, to a certain extent, the what if is helpful in terms of planning, in terms of protection. But this schema represents the overdoing of the what if. If you live your life primarily based on all these fears and things that could happen but may not happen, you may just not live.
Right. And a lot of it is fortune telling.
Right.
Because we have no proof that something is going to happen.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's just an inner feeling. And the feelings are usually a lot of anxiety and tension as well.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes people feel like their thoughts are kind of like racing, or they have a lot of big thoughts where their mind kind of, there's almost like this crash and burn that always happens. It's like, not only did I do bad on this exam, but I'm going to fail the course, which is going to make me fail my degree. And without a degree, I'm not going to be able to get a job. And without a job, I'm going to be broke. My parents are going to kick me out, and then I'm going to be homeless.
And I'm going to die. So it's a lot, you know, a lot. And it's not just, this exam. It's like, I'm not going to get into university. Mm-hmm. And when you take a step back, you know, it's often the people that are doing, like, you know, they're doing really well, or they're able to take care of themselves, or financially they're doing more than okay. Right. You know what I mean? Or they're in good health, but it's the what if that potentially something could happen.
That's
you know,
like,
and
that.
Usually they have someone around them, maybe a family member who have financially, you know, had to file for bankruptcy.
Right,
and so they are trying to not put themselves in that position. Or having a friend who academically, out of the blue, they didn't get accepted to university because their grades dropped. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
So definitely, I think what's interesting about what you just said is that the schema develops in a variety of ways where, yeah, the person could have witnessed these things happen to someone else and had that excessive worry that it may happen to them. Or there could be, you know, a parent who's always reminding them of the dangers of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember growing up, my mom believed that the world was a very, very dangerous place. Especially socially. So don't trust nobody.
Don't
leave your drink anywhere. Make sure you got... So all these things were ingrained, but it was done to the extreme because, you know, even she valued safety over friendship.
Yeah.
To like an absurd amount. Like, it was a little imbalanced. So...
Did you get growing up the example of, like, you're going to go shopping with your friends and they're going to put an item in your bag and you're going to end up in prison? And it's like, how do we...
Okay, my mom was not that.
But it develops... it develops this idea that, like, you can't trust nobody.
Ever. And I do believe that trust is something that's earned. But when you're going around through life thinking of how everybody can wrong you, or you're hypervigilant about how people can wrong you, there's something a little... impairing about that, in that you may not actually develop any deeper meaningful relationships with people if you're only thinking about how they may fuck you over.
Mm-hmm. Or the relationships that you have may be very superficial, like they don't know nothing about you.
Yee, because you ain't tell nobody everything.
Yeah, you don't need to give nobody your social insurance.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean,
open up a little bit. Some people are very afraid of certain things happening to them medically because maybe there's some, you know, family history as well.
Oh, yeah.
So they may be overly cautious. And, you know, especially things like, for example, let's say cancer. Some people will spend their lives kind of making sure that they're always on top of their diet and they're never kind of ever enjoying certain foods.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the reality of it is sometimes it is something that's very much so out of your control.
It is.
You can run every day, you can eat all these things, and you can still end up physically vulnerable.
But the thing is, usually it's the fact that they overdo it. It's like, I can't have a cheat day, because if I do, what if it makes it, you know, that's what makes it, if I have a burger.
Right.
And it's like, you're running every day.
It's one burger.
You know, it's not going to...
Right?
Yeah, but it's... usually that's the schema, and it's just the paranoia.
Oh my gosh. I moving into my home.
Yeah. Nuria got a home, y'all.
I have never felt more paranoid in my entire adult life about my safety. Because I'm like, I'm going to get these cameras set up here.
And you did.
Because I watch a lot of true crime documentaries.
Which you shouldn't.
Which I should not. But that is internally, these scenarios are always playing in my mind. They're like intrusive thoughts.
Yeah.
And it's been to the point where I've sometimes experienced either anxiety attacks or I've found it difficult to like sleep.
Because you're like, what if?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's bad.
Yeah.
It's absolutely wild.
It's debilitating.
It is completely debilitating. So, you know, when it comes to this particular schema, And again, it's really about balance, you know, being concerned for your safety and taking care of yourself, but also being aware of how free and how spontaneous your world is. Because I think there's always a balance that is to be considered between those two things. Like, of course, I'm going to take precautions, but I'm also going to allow myself to, like, have fun or to, like, enjoy this experience for what it is. Because the thing is, when it comes to this particular schema, sometimes people will waste a whole experience worrying that they can never actually
get back.
That they can never actually enjoy the experience. Like, if you're on a date, for example, and you're just always worried about what may potentially happen, you're not going to enjoy the other person. You're not going to enjoy the interaction because you're going to be so caught up in your mind that you're not going to be present.
Right. And you're probably not gonna present as your authentic self.
Right.
Because you're just doing so much thinking and you're just, you know, overanalyzing everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But with this schema, I think one of the things is trying to rationalize with it. You know, like, I have a security system in place. I have cameras all around my home. If anything were to happen, you know, there is this whole background work being done. Alarm would go off. Like, I am okay.
Right? Or if I find myself in a situation where I feel unsafe, here are my top three contacts that I could call. There's 9112. I can run over to this place. So usually in these kind of catastrophe type of situations, we need to remind ourselves of how we're going to cope. If it is that one in a million chance and it does happen, what are the things that you could do in that circumstance? Because even the exam to homeless example, you could think of like 50 steps between that one exam and hopelessness and homelessness. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So think about those 50 steps.
You can talk to the prof.
Take the class again. Change your degree. You can take a year off. You can get a job. There are so many things in
between. You can get accommodations. There's so many steps in between homelessness, but it's like the person jumps to right, and the thing is to not learn to not feed into the schema,
right, and just acknowledge that it's there.
Yeah,
but also do the work to remind yourself of the coping behaviors that you have, of the resources. So whether it's like services, people, places that make you feel safe or that could potentially help you in that particular scenario would be very important. Just making that list.
Yeah. The schema is a tough one, especially from a Haitian household where everything is dangerous.
The whole world is dangerous.
For a long time, I would walk back home like 9 p.m. or even 8 p.m. Looking back and being hypervigilant where it's like, okay, like you are fine. Right. Sun is out still. You know what I mean? Like, chill. You're fine.
Right. So, yes, it's really interesting, this one. But I think one reflection question would be, you know, when you think of your worst case scenario as it comes to your life, what are the steps that would come before that? And also, if you truly do get there, what are some supports or resources you could use if you were in that dire situation?
Yeah.
And really think about it.
Yeah.
Really think about it, because there are some internal and external resources.
There are.
Some people are very resourceful and they don't give themselves enough credit for what they're able to do.
No, they don't.
At all.
They don't. And that's always the first, you know, first place to start.
Yeah.
Develop your own coping tools.
Right. Internally and externally.
Yeah.
You can also, you know, sit there with yourself and think about, for you, what are your practical skills in the world? How do you naturally show up in your life, in other people's lives? Maybe you're really good at connecting with people and making relationships, or maybe you're really innovative. Maybe you're really able to solve these issues and adapt to different circumstances. Those are all going to be qualities that are so important when you find yourself in tricky situations, because it is you going through that situation, meaning that, of course, you may have some weaknesses, but you have some strengths as well that have gotten you this far in life.
Right. So use them. Really important to use them and to maybe develop new ones as well.
But I'd say this is definitely a schema that takes, you know, active day-to-day approaching. That's for sure. So I won't minimize the difficulty of it. But yes, I think that is it for today. So we'll leave you with
bet.